welcome to this very special edition of the Team Wales podcast in partnership with Speakeasy Club and hosted by me, Simon Clark. In this series, we're joined by Team Wales partners and some very special guests for an open and honest conversation about mental health in business, sport and life. Together, we'll explore how these organisations support their teams, the reasons behind their commitment to mental well-being and how to navigate those tough but essential conversations that we all have on a day-to-day basis. Launched in honour of World Mental Health Day, this series shines a light on the importance of creating a supportive and mentally healthy workplace. Stay tuned for powerful insights and meaningful conversations. I think you're all really going to enjoy this series. In this episode, we speak to Kyron Sullivan and Lisa Stokes from Principality, a relatively new partner to Team Wales, but some really interesting stuff there, both from Lisa's lived experience. She talks really openly and honestly and brilliantly in many ways around her struggles and how she ultimately doesn't want anyone else to feel the way she did. And that's coupled with a lot of the work that Lisa and Kyron do together, you know, around the well-being group in the organisation. And Kyron uses kind of experience as a elite golfer, it's a very lonely sport at times, and how he now works with clients and with businesses and with customers to ultimately look after them. And that's what it's all about. So really hope you enjoy this episode and we look forward to hearing your feedback. Lisa, Kyron, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Really, really appreciate your time. We've got about 40 minutes in the diary for this conversation and it is very much a conversation. I think that's something I'm really interested in. We've kind of spoken individually offline as well prior to this, which is great, and got a bit of a feeling for kind of how you guys operate individually, but also how kind of Principality operates as an organisation. So just to kick things off, Aaron, I'll start with you. Can you just give us a bit of an introduction into you, who you are, what your role is within Principality, and kind of what that partnership with Team Wales, although it's quite new, what it looks and feels like for you?
My name's Kyron Sullivan. I'm a midterm mortgage specialist for Principality. I look after all our interest-only mortgage customers and vulnerable customers. So, been here 11 years now, well, just over 11 years. Prior to that, I was a professional golfer and played tournaments all around the world, which was really, really, really good. Good fun. That seems a long time ago now. But yeah, and the link up with Team Wales is I spoke to head of governance around that, and it's more around the social mobility pledge and just trying to give kids an opportunity, really, and have role models through business and sport. Yeah, and I've been a mental health advocate within Principality since 2018. I got involved after working with a few customers who had mental health issues and talked a lot about suicide and financial distress and financial harm, really, and wanted to learn a little bit more around mental health and helping people and helping customers first of all, but then became a mental health advocate and help colleagues now, which it's been very rewarding, very difficult at times, but glad to help others.
We'll definitely pick up on a couple of bits you said there, which I'm really interested in. But Lisa, over to you.
Lisa, so I'm a change oversight manager in Principality, which 18 years now. So I came straight out of university, I guess similar to Kyron as well in terms of the mental health. So I'm the chair of the Wellbeing Matters Network. I've been mental health first aider for a few years as well, and I've done that all, I guess, primarily from my own personal mental health experiences and where I've tried to help others. That's naturally where I've gone to.
Brilliant. I think that's where a lot of us come from, really, isn't it, as well? As, you know, we have these lived experiences and sadly, in many cases, you know, can relate to a lot of people. I'm certainly one of those as well. But also it's perhaps a good thing, and it's really positive that you can kind of create other environments for other people to maybe not feel the way that you felt at a certain time. So thank you for setting all that up. And again, I've made a few notes as you were chatting, so we'll be coming back to some of that. I want to just ask both of you, and Kyron, will come back to you first with this slot. Really simple and straightforward. What does mental health mean to you?
It's your own well-being, really, isn't it? It's only between your own ears a lot of the time, but it's being focused enough to, you know, live your life. In my case, you know, family life, when it's good, when it's not so good. Your mental health just impacts all of that, whether it's your family, your work, or even you know, your friendships, really. It's about being... I love the stress bucket analogy, you know, all the stresses that go in, and when it's overflowing, it's hard to deal with, you know, the basic tasks day to day, and it's emptying that bucket, really, and knowing how to empty it, or how to push holes in the bottom, and what to do when it's overflowing, really. And a lot of that is down to yourself, but others around you, your support network, you know, friends, family, recognising that, but not being afraid to talk about it as well.
Was that a thing back when you were playing and competing? Was it very much this kind of world that we would imagine?
Yeah, I think golf is quite a lonely life as well. It's very much an individual sport. It was hard. It was great when things were going great. Travelling the world, staying in nice hotels, playing, following the sun. It was great. Having a family changed me, I would say. You know, it wasn't. Not that I would ever say I was selfish, but I was very focused on being the best I could be at golf. But yeah, I think having children changed my priorities. And then, yeah, it's around, you know, doing the best for them. And family, really, now is my focus. And is it talked about now in professional sport in general? Yes, a little bit more. But there's still that tend to shy away from the difficult conversations, I think. You know, maybe that's, I don't know, for whatever reason, but it's certainly talked about a lot more in football, in rugby, in golf. Recently, one of the top Americans took his own life. So,
yeah, it's a challenge, isn't it? You know, those solo sports, if you will, as you say, with golf. And, you know, it's a lot more needs to be done. There's a lot of travelling away from the family. I know, Lisa, you were nodding away now when family was mentioned. So just over to you, just give us your sort of idea of what mental health is and what it means to you.
I think mental health is something you don't think about until you need to. So if you'd asked me that 10 years ago, I wouldn't have even had really an answer to what mental health was. But I think once you've then gone through poor mental health, you realise that mental health isn't just when you're ill. It's all the time. The thing I learn a lot more now is more that it's not just the mental health side of it. It's your physical, financial well-being, anything else that's, you know, we've learned a lot about intersectionality in work as well. It's all those different parts of your own individual personality, your community, that actually all adds into your mental health. And I don't think what we do enough is look after our own mental health. We only kind of respond to it when we really need to, rather than actually thinking, no, I'm not going to go to that today, or I'm not going to do that activity because I'm looking after my mental health. And we tend to put others first, but that's something you learn through experience, I guess.
Yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. And a lot of that, we might feel like we're being selfish and the kind of negative use of the word selfish, but there's a lot of positivity that comes from being selfish. Only if you're comfortable, and please feel free to say no if you're not. Are you able to share kind of your experiences and how that kind of your experience treats?
Yeah, so mine started when I was pregnant with my second child. I had prenatal depression, of which I'd never heard of before, didn't know what that was. Started off with panic attacks, I guess, and social anxiety, struggled in work. I couldn't, thought it was baby brain first of all, like I couldn't even concentrate to send an email, but it really got to the point where I couldn't leave the house. And I was lucky enough that I was in an area that I had a specialist midwife that looked after me and supported me throughout my pregnancy. It was that bad that I was on medication while I was pregnant as well. And it was a lot of worry that you take at that point. But I remember being told, one of the memories that stick in my mind is that the stress that you're feeling can actually impact the baby more than taking medication. So that's a decision I had to make at the time. And then you obviously go through that thing of when you then give birth, thinking, am I then going to get postnatal depression? And I had a few weeks of reprieve. It was like powerlifting moment, just as they talk about it. But then I did have postnatal depression, and it was a very different experience to the prenatal depression for me. I had severe depression, I had severe anxiety, but it was much more focused on the depression. I was self-harming, I was in a few attempts where I had attempts at suicide, and it was really bad, a lot of hallucinations, and it probably went as bad as it could have got. But I was off work in total for about 16 months, I think it was, I was off in total. So I think when I came back from that, then it was just to, you know, I had a newborn baby, I had a toddler running around as well. So for me, it wasn't the typical stigma that you hear about postnatal depression. Anything I only ever thought about was only about myself, and still completely idolised my children. So they're the ones that really kept me going, and family and friends were brilliant throughout it as well. So yeah, the worst time of my life. But I think what you do come back from it is you realise when you've gone that low, then you can come out at the other end and actually learn a lot more about yourself. A lot of things like counselling and everything taught me a lot about how to get through that, how to get better. But then that's where I turned it into, how can I help others as well? Because you realise when you've been there, then you can see the signs in others. You don't want anyone else to experience it as bad as you did. I would never wish anyone to go through what I did. So,
I mean, first of all, thank you for sharing all that. Really, really appreciate it. And goes without saying, I mean, you're clearly in a much better place now, which is great. And again, thanks for trusting us with that. Yeah, you're kind of led into it, really. It's not to dismiss it, but to go, right, no one's going to feel the way I felt. So how can I help? And how can I create an environment where people don't? So just talk us through the Wellbeing Matters, chairing that group. What does that look like? And some of the things that you have a group put into practice across the organisation.
It's one of the things I love about Principality, not to sound cheesy, but when you speak to some other people in different companies, they don't kind of get all the same opportunities we do. And yes, we have the Wellbeing Matters Network. We were Mental Health Network, and we've expanded now so that we're covering all ranges of wellbeing. That's why we've done that. So we're also talking about physical wellbeing and financial wellbeing. So we have sub-support groups as well. So IVF support group, long-term illnesses, menopause, you know, more of these things there, those taboo topics, they're being discussed, and we've got those support in place for them. Parents in their Wellbeing Matters Network as well have been for probably longer than me now, I think. And we're just a group of individuals all inspired for their own different personal reasons, really. And we manage any of the events that we want to do. So if we want to try and tackle stigma around eating disorders or suicide awareness, then we'll arrange a speaker to come and talk, or we'll arrange some kind of event in work. But then we're also trying to do is try and do things that make a bit of a lasting difference to Principality. So this year we particularly wanted to expand our mental health first aiders. There was just a small, really small number of us at that point, and we've been really successful this year in getting internally trained mental health first aiders as well. So we've now got a program where more people are being trained as mental health first aiders again in November. Activity there is really making more of a difference, much wider across Principality, because we know we can do as much as we can with awareness days, but that's not going to reach everyone. So it's also thinking, how can we do more to support those ones that when you speak to people, when you're supporting people one-to-one, you hear the different things that they're facing across work and home life. So much of it is a range of different reasons, whether or not it's family life, how their children are, how their partners are, bereavement. It's so many different things that we just try to listen to what our colleagues are saying and try to tailor our events and our awareness days and things like that to those, to see if we can do support for those things.
I mean, it's amazing. It's incredible broad breadth of support that the organisation offers. And as we say, that everybody's got their own motivation. There's a lot in there I'd love to pick up. But one of the ones you talked about there, kind of fitting with Principality as an organisation, is the financial wellbeing piece. And Kyron, I wanted to kind of just explore that a bit with you, because when we spoke, it's something personally I'm a lot more aware of myself now, my own financial situation. You know, life's been tricky at the minute for everybody. Like, you know, there's a lot of pressures and a lot of the support, and you mentioned it in the start, a lot of the better customers that you support, that's such an important aspect. So just, can you just
Ask
me a little bit more about that?
That's what I got involved, really. We started the Mental Health Advocates Network back in 2018. I was one of the first cohorts of people to get trained in mental health first aid. Basically, February 2018, had three customers. He did 2 weeks, two guys, similar demographic to myself, early 40s at the time, kids. But again, going through that financial pressures, high risk of losing their home and things, and talking about suicide once again. And then I remember this one customer, 65. At the age of 55, he was healthy. He had a good job, lots of savings, got glandular fever, was off sick work for a long time, ended up losing his job. Then went through separation with his wife and then his daughters. And it was his granddaughter's 8th birthday. And he was like, well, you know, no, I just can't take it anymore. And I just thought, you just want to learn as much as you can and just listen a lot of the time. But, you know, that's what's really, really, you know, empowering for me, is that since then, we've got senior managers talking about their own mental health issues. You know, one of our seniors managers went through a little bit of a breakdown, but talked openly to hundreds of colleagues about it and how it felt to him, which opened up that other conversation, really. And going back to the network, is one of my proudest moments, is getting all the people managers to go through that mental health training. We're due to go through a refresher, organising a refresher, but especially through COVID, where everybody's working remotely, and it's really important to understand your team and the people around you, really, because when you're in work, you have those conversations around the coffee machine and at lunch, or, you know, in the lifts and things. And I think especially in finance, people were missing that, those conversations, just sort of that general chit chat and a lot of that headspace it builds up when you're working at home and quite isolated. So yeah, it's, you know, it's been a really positive thing for me and for a lot of colleagues, really, the wellbeing network.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's, again, that level of care as well is I mean, it's second to none, isn't it, really? It's vital that you're able to allow customers or whether your colleagues to be able to go, look, you know, this is a tricky situation, but we'll navigate it together. Apologies. What are some of those skills that you mentioned there that you what are your proudest moments, you know, getting all the people managers to undertake the mental health first aid training? What are some of those skills, and maybe speaking from yourselves as well, that really kind of add value to people and can support them in the workplace?
From my point of view, a lot of the time is listening, really, and a lot, not really solutionising, providing answers, is just actually listening, you know, and understanding really whoever you're speaking to, really. And it's listening and just try pointing them in the right direction, really, understanding where they are and where you can signpost them best to get help, really, if they are at a serious level, you know, or potentially self-harming.
Yeah, that you just mentioned that, and Lisa, I'll get your thoughts in a second, that's okay. But I want to touch on that bit about solutionising. You're right, I don't know if it's a male thing or if it's just a general thing. It's coming from a great place and everybody wants to help, but a lot of the time people don't need it fixed. They just need you to hear me, just listen, just let me get this out of my head. So I think that's a really important point. Nisha, how are you?
Yeah, that one really sticks with me, because I think being on the receiving end of it, I used to get so frustrated with people telling me what to do and how they could fix it. It's like, I'm not asking you to fix it, I'm just asking you to listen to me, because I need to say it out loud, I need to talk about it. So I think you then get that, but I think listening is absolutely the best thing. But I think one of the things as well, similar to how Kyra mentioned stress back at the beginning, is when someone's in that maybe crisis moment and they're not feeling right, they're not thinking logically. So yes, we can listen to them, we can support them in terms of suggesting them to go and speak to someone and get help from a doctor or someone, but also there are just certain things that you can talk about, different tools depending on what it is they're talking about. So circles, controls, stress bucket, those kind of things that you can help to use as a bit of a tool when you're talking to them. But it all depends on who you're talking to and what situation they're in. Don't know when you're in that mental health first aid moment what that conversation's going to lead to. You don't know when you ask that open question, you know, you ask that question, yeah, are they thinking anything serious about hurting themselves or anything? You don't know what the answer's going to be then, so you do just have to sometimes just go with it and take your time and pause and listen. And that's a big part of the training that we've been through doing it. I think each call you do helps you a little bit more with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, asking those tricky questions. It's not a question. Great example there you've just used. You know, are you thinking doing anything permanent or anything like that, any suicidal thoughts? They're difficult questions to ask, aren't they? Because you really hope they're not. But also, if, you know, like yourself, you can't have to share, you know, it might be triggering for you to ask that question. At the same time, you never quite know how it's going to land either way, but also what you do next. That's the bit, isn't it? And I think, as you say, being able to create those environments where you go, we're not going to solve this, but we know the right avenues to support people. That feels really powerful. Are you able to, and Karen, you gave us a really kind of good example of an old gentleman, an old customer that you spoke to. But are you able, without breaking confidentiality, obviously, are you able to share any kind of examples or experiences of where the group has maybe really helped the colleague or has really helped a customer? I kind of ask Lisa, I'll ask you as well if you've got any, if appropriate.
Yeah, there's a number of colleagues I've helped with. Again, listening a lot of the time, helping them have negotiations with HR and our people directorate, meeting with them before and after, almost as an advocate of, you okay, you know, what you want to get out of this meeting, what does good look like for you, your return to work, a business to make things easier for you. For instance, one colleague was off a lot during COVID, where I didn't think it was the best thing for that person. We arranged for them to actually work in a brand, so they had that communication with people, but just at reduced hours. It was possibly the quietness and the isolation which was causing that poor mental health, really. And it's that routine, getting into that routine and slowly getting back into positive mental health where they can function more and more and do their job, really. In terms of customers, again, we all work with customers as much as we possibly can. We're extremely flexible as well with our mortgage customers, and everybody is different. So again, there's many circumstances where we do help a lot of customers, because at the end of the day, it is their home and what we want them to enjoy, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This sort of, how about you? Anything that jumps out that you kind of think, yeah, this group has really made a difference?
Probably one of the worst calls I had, actually, was one where someone told me just out of the blue in the middle of me talking to them and helping them that they wanted to end their life.
Right.
And I think no matter how much training you have for that moment, you don't know what kind to do. It doesn't matter if you've been there or anything. Everyone's situation's different. I think the part of the work for me was we had the processes around it so that I had someone, like, so we've got trained, we've got internal trainers that trained us as mental health first aiders, but they're also our go-to support. Right. So I had someone to go to that. I had a process that I could follow to make sure that person was safe when they went home, what all the process, you know, all that process around it, that for that person was their turning point, because they hadn't been acknowledging how they'd been feeling until that point. But just by me having, you know, that moment to ask them those questions and ask them how they were actually feeling meant they could suddenly realise it and get the help that they needed. And they took a little bit of time off work, but came back and was much better for it. So, and you just think, what if I hadn't been there to ask that question that day? But, some of the most recent calls that I've been having have been a lot of relationship breakdowns and worried about their own children's mental health. Teen mental health is something we hear a lot about at the moment, so we're trying to do a bit more with that. An awareness point in principality as well. But
one of the talks I organised earlier in the year with a guy called Sid Madge. I met him a couple of years ago in the mental health and wellbeing show over at City Hall, which was in Cardiff City Stadium last year. But yeah, really inspired me. Went to a seminar around being at your best more of the time. And he's got a company called me.com. I may have mentioned it. Me with three E's. But he talks about me in a minute, me in a works minute, me in a family minute, which I just think, you know, really suited principality. Again, because if you're not focusing on yourself, it's hard for you to help others, whether that be a family or in work, really. And he came in and did a talk around creating safe space for teenagers, really. And, you know, everybody's going, all those teenagers going through exams and COVID, post-COVID. I think it's a really important topic as well, you know, with the youngsters, the workforce of tomorrow. More talked about how you're feeling, you know, and whether you're happy, whether you're sad, what makes you happy, what makes you sad, and just creating that space where, especially with social media and things like that today, it's very easy for children to become very intrinsic and really protective of themselves and their own mental health, really, rather than, again, talking about things.
It's a really powerful bit, I think you just said there, isn't it, is the workforce of tomorrow, and whether that's looking at how do we support that generation coming into the workplace, or similarly, how do we support colleagues with teenagers? You know, it's I've got a 5-year-old at the moment, which comes with different challenges. Yeah, I'm going to deal with social media or high school or anything like that. Yeah, but
yeah,
that is a really big thing, isn't it? How do they communicate? How do we look after them? How do we look after ourselves? But also, I think what's quite clear from principalities and organisation, but specifically from you two, which is great, is very much about curiosity, very much about constantly just looking at what's next, how can we improve this? That constant improvement, not just in a business sense, but in a personal sense, is incredible. And as a customer, I'm sure, which I'm not, but I may well change them as a result. But that's all people want. That's all people want, you know, and that's really the same with colleagues as well. So thank you for that. Two more questions, if that's all right. Just a little bit touched on there, and I know the partnership with Team Wales is pretty new, but how have you guys been involved in it at all? We talked about social mobility. It's a really broad topic. From your point of view, what does that kind of look and feel like moving forward?
The Social Mobility Pledge, which is something that we have signed up to, and I think it's just empowering kids to have those role models through sports, through business, and yeah, just to start those conversations going to Team Wales. Myself, you know, as I came through playing golf at a junior level for Wales and a senior level for Wales, so I've got a big interest in it, having gone through that, and a lot of coming from, you know, single parent family on a council estate to working for principality now and again following my dreams as a professional golfer for a while. It's a massive thing, really, to get into Team Wales, the Commonwealth, and that inspiration through sport. I think that, again, there's no barriers in the way. If you're good, you work hard, you can get to the top in sport. And watching the Olympics this year, you know, and there's so many different sports and the Paralympics, there's always that story of passion and determination to succeed, really. So we can do a little bit more with Team Wales and, yeah, drive that social mobility pledge, really.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. As you say, it's complex. It's a lot of moving parts, but it's incredibly exciting. And I think you've used the word quite a bit. Well, both of you have actually, I think, empowering, which is quite clear. So no, I'm really excited to see how that partnership goes moving forward. Last question from me, and I'm going to ask you both the same one. It's supposed to be a bit of fun, this one. So no need to be too concerned. Something that I'm really interested in and that's really important for me is around the clubhouse and finding your space, but also understanding what your clubhouse is. I've been asking this question for about 12 months now, and I'm actually in the minority where my clubhouse is my local rugby club. It is Gibson Moors, and I'm one of the very few who says that. So I'm really interested to kind of from you to understand where your clubhouse is, where that place is you feel safe, not judged, and just kind of be happy. So I'll ask you, Beverly, so I'll ask you first, if that's okay.
Yeah, there's two different answers there. You say the word safe, something to me has always been home is my safe space. I think being an introvert as well, when your social battery is drained in the day, home is a safe space. But I've really taken to running this year, wanting to improve my physical health to support my mental health as well. And what you're talking about there is when I'm out running, I'm on my own. I always go outside. I much prefer that than a treadmill, headphones in. And everyone's nice. Everyone says hello to you as you go past them. Other not runners nod and say hello. But I'm kind of more in that thing of being able to go out, especially when you've had a busy day or something like that, just going out for a run. And I'm not fast or anything like that. It's just more, that's my regenerate bit. That's my mindfulness, I think. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Just, it works for you. That's the most important thing, isn't it? Kyron, how about you? Where's your clubhouse?
Yeah, most probably on the golf course. Yeah, just going over the brow with the first, not so much in the 19th hole, although I do like that too. But my happy place would be on the beach. Lucky enough to live in Barbados. And the happy place would be on the beach. The happy place would be walking on the beach, really, yeah.
Amazing. No, brilliant. It's not a bad place to be down there on Barry Island, is it? To be fair. Lisa, Kyron, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate your time. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to share at all today?
I think so. Just thank you for having us, really.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Pleasure. No, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to speaking soon. I really enjoyed sitting down with Lisa and Kyron there. It's interesting getting two people's perspectives on really on kind of the same thing, but they're in the same world, but different parts of that world. And there's also clearly that crossover between what they both believe in and what they want to achieve and what they want to support colleagues and customers with across the organisation. There's a lot of buy-in. It feels like there's a lot of great work that's gone in behind the scenes to support what they're doing, support the well-being of the organisation and creating those environments where everyone can thrive. And ultimately then that gives some really, really positive care to the customers, and no doubt that some of those challenging and difficult conversations that they've had, that training, that support, that, how did I say it really, that kind of permission to look after people and prioritise them, really, is really, really heartwarming. And I'm really grateful for their time. Stay tuned. We've got some fantastic episodes coming up as well, and I'm really, really interested to see all sort of things you are taking away from listening to this Team Wales Partner Podcast.